Terrorism goes high tech. We're going to talk about it right now, and specifically the Islamic State. Our guest is David Gartenstein Ross, who's a senior fellow with the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, defenddemocracy.org. He's written a new article called ISIL's Virtual Planners, a Critical Terrorist Innovation. David, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Jerry. It's always great to join you, and it's been a while, so it's an honor to join you again.
Oh, well, thank you, and the honor's mine, too. Okay, so first question, and this may sound dumb, but some people call ISIS, Islamic State, some people call it ISIS, others call it ISIL. You're using the Islamic State in Iraq and the Levant term, ISIL, throughout your article. What's the difference between those two, and does it matter? I guess it doesn't matter. We could say Islamic State, but anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, the answer is it doesn't matter. I actually don't use Islamic State in Iraq and the Levant typically because they no longer call themselves that. They just call themselves Islamic State now. But it's the custom of the publication that I wrote in, War on the Rocks, to refer to it as ISIL or the Islamic State in Iraq and the Levant. I think the reason they use it that way is because that's what it's called within U.S. government circles. And, you know, personally, okay, when I'm briefing within U.S. government or speaking at a U.S. government conference, for example, I'll refer to them as ISIL just because that's the custom that they have. To me, it doesn't make a difference other than the fact that Islamic State right now is the most accurate of the terms to use.
Okay, so when in Rome, do as the Romans. Okay, so, or all things to all people type thing. I got it. Okay, so the real story here is that the Islamic State has managed to succeed in terms of high tech, whereas Al-Qaeda and other groups like it committed to the same thing have not been able to succeed as well.
Well, more than anything, it's that Al-Qaeda in the past wasn't able to succeed in this regard. I think today Al-Qaeda could and will, in fact, replicate what ISIS, Islamic State. Here, we'll call them ISIS because everyone's familiar with that, right?
Okay, yeah.
So I think that Al-Qaeda can and will replicate what ISIS is doing. It's just in the past, there were certain cases where they tried and didn't succeed.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, you had a couple of different cases where you had, and let's talk about, first of all, what they're doing, because that will make clear where Al-Qaeda had failed. The Islamic State is using a model which I refer to as a virtual planner model. What that means is that you have an individual who's part of ISIS's external operations network, that is the network that carries out terrorist attacks outside of their core territory, who communicates with people online. You never met them in person. In almost every case, I've never met them in person, but is able to serve all the roles that a physical network and a physical recruiter would. That is, identifying operatives, egging them on to carry out attacks, helping them to select targets, helping them to determine the timing of the attack, giving sanction to it, helping them to record martyrdom tapes in advance so that after the attack is done, they can more easily incorporate it into their propaganda, and even giving them technical advice, how to build bombs and the like. Now, the reason Al-Qaeda failed in the past, and the two cases where they failed in the U.S. were the David Headley case and another case, the Zazi case, where they attempted to really help both of them through the online environment. In both cases, the fact that that Al-Qaeda was communicating online with these guys allowed authorities very quickly to pick them up. Now, what's changed is two things. One is social media, where, with the boom in social media and the ability to feel like you're really friends with someone half a world away living in Raqqa or wherever, they have a much broader audience, many more people they can reach out to and be in constant communication with. But the more important point is the boom in end-to-end encryption. You know, years ago, 10 years ago, when some of these, very flawed attempts at trying to use the virtual planner model on Al-Qaeda's part occurred, you didn't have the same kind of encryption. Surveillance was going to pick up communications between operatives and Al-Qaeda. Whereas now, end-to-end encryption means that if you and I are exchanging encrypted communications, nobody reads it in the interim. It's encrypted from the time that I send it until it reaches you. And even the company that sponsors the service isn't actually reading the communications. That's what end-to-end encryption is.
Well, what's that first word? I'm sorry. What's that first word you keep saying?
End to end.
Oh, end to end encryption.
End to
okay.
End. Mm-hmm. So, like, from my end to your end of the communication, it's encrypted all the way through. And this has really changed the ability of governments to conduct electronic surveillance. It's made ISIS's new model possible. And one of the results of that is we're seeing not only more frequent attacks, but attacks that are deadlier and more integrated into ISIS's strategy.
Okay, December 2016, Berlin. You had this jihadist get into a truck and kill a lot of people in a crowded Christmas square. By the way, I have an in-law that lives only 5 minutes from there, so we were really praying that that family was not affected. How was that attack related in any way to this virtual planning that you're talking about?
Well, we don't know that it was a virtual planning attack, to be very clear. We begin with by looking at this incident, and that was really the hook to the piece. But we know that after Anis Amri plowed his hijacked truck through the Christmas market in one of Berlin's main public squares, even though some people were skeptical that ISIS was just taking credit for an attack to which it had no real connection, 4 days after that attack, it released a video showing Amri pledging his loyalty to ISIS's leader, to Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. What they were able to do there was to show that he was a committed member of the group and that they had foreknowledge of the attack.
Mm.
Investigators have also said that the operative, Anis Amri, had communicated with ISIS operatives at least once through the encrypted Telegram messaging app. That means that, and we don't know what the content of those communications are, but all of these facts, the fact that they had the video, the fact that he was in communication with operatives, suggests to us that it may be the virtual planner model. We don't know, but we do know of a number of other cases which were definitely the virtual planner model, including the Notre Dame attack, which fortunately didn't succeed other than the stabbing of a police officer. But as your listeners may know, terrorists tried to attack the Notre Dame Cathedral, the very famous Notre Dame Cathedral in France. And that was an attack that was organized by an ISIS virtual planner named Rashid Qassim.
When was that? I'm sorry, I missed that particular story, I guess.
It was
recently?
September of this year.
Oh, September 2016. And it was a female terrorist?
It was actually a group of female terrorists, number of female terrorists. So there was a car found outside of the Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris, which had gas canisters in it. And the intention was of the attackers was to use them to effect a car bomb to attack the Notre Dame Cathedral, which is, of course, a famous symbol of Europeans' Christian heritage.
Yeah.
And yes, it was an attempted attack. The attackers did not succeed. They were arrested. One of them stabbed a police officer outside a rail station as authorities made the arrest. But yes, it was an attempted attack against that grand symbol of Christianity.
Wow.
And it was an attack that was arranged by an ISIS virtual planner for Europe.
Wow.
Who was named Rashid Qassim. He is a French citizen.
Okay, let me ask you this. In Orlando last year, there was that notorious nightclub attack, killed about 50 people. And in that, the shooter was, I guess, sending out messages through social media, Facebook and so forth, pledging his allegiance to ISIS. And now I understand there's a big lawsuit from some of the survivors against Facebook. And that doesn't totally compute. I mean, what did Facebook didn't cause this? But I'd like your comment on this, because that seems, he's using high tech. He was using high tech. And I guess he's what we would call a lone wolf type of ISIS member.
Yeah, we don't know yet how to categorize it, but it may have been. A lot of people call it a lone wolf attack, which is very different than a virtual planner attack. A lone wolf attack is literally a lone operative who is inspired by an organization. There's some evidence that suggests it may have actually been a virtual planner led attack.
Oh wow!
But we don't know right now. The answer isn't clear. And so I personally have just acknowledged that uncertainty exists.
Okay. But in the meantime, the lawsuit itself, does that make sense that Facebook would be sued? Seems like they're just You know,
well,
I don't know.
It wasn't because of his pledge to ISIS that they that they're suing. So look, the pledge to ISIS, he did it not through Facebook, though he did send social media posts, but rather he did that directly in talking to the authorities. I think probably what the theory of the lawsuit is going to be is that these organizations, Twitter, Facebook, Google, were negligent in allowing ISIS to continue using their mediums, and that allowed radicalization to occur, that in essence they provided services that allowed militant groups to press on. So for full disclosure, Google is a client of mine. Like, I do work for Google, mm-hmm. so I'm not an impartial source in this.
Sure.
And I am, in fact, skeptical of this lawsuit. Regardless of that tie to Google,
sure.
I think that there is a good argument to be made that that in particular, Twitter was for a time, though not now, negligent in or irresponsible, I would say, in the use that they allowed militant groups to make of their platform. For ISIS at this point, they've been pulling ISIS accounts off right and left.
Mm.
But there's both more to the lawsuit than just those messages, but also I think that ultimately the tech firms do have the better of that argument.
All right, and we'll see what happens as that plays out. But going back to the big story here, unfortunately, Islamic State virtual planners are in some cases succeeding in using high tech in order to carry out their plots. Now, one thing that's interesting, you use that phrase encryption, end-to-end encryption. And, we know in the past, like World War II, you had the example of the Enigma machine or whatever. And, there was a big struggle with the British trying to, to decode what the Nazis were saying and so forth. Are the ISIS in some ways communicating, in code to their people? And, so even if somebody saw this message, somebody even in intelligence, they saw the message, they wouldn't necessarily know what it was saying.
No, not through the virtual planner model, because the virtual planner model takes advantage of the fact that lots of people want to communicate with ISIS, and some of them can be turned into operatives. But given that they're communicating with people who they don't know face-to-face, it would be impossible for them to have a code in advance that they could use. So if you were to de-encrypt it, you'd have a very good idea of what was going on.
Hmm. Well, what would be your suggestion to law enforcement to try and, prevent future attacks related to this high-tech, phenomenon?
I would have a number of pieces of advice, but one of them, and something that in some cases has been done very successfully, is making good use of the ability to infiltrate human operatives into this virtual planner space.
Yeah.
If you get to know the virtual planners, that can give you some idea of what they're doing. I mean, one of the operational security weaknesses in the whole virtual planner model is the fact that since they don't know the operatives with whom they're communicating, right, since these are actually unknown quantities to them,
mm-hmm.
It's a lot easier to get human sources in who communicate with virtual planners.
Yeah.
And furthermore, that can give you some idea of what kind of targets they might select and the like. But
sure.
Ultimately, look, this is an adaptation that for the moment decisively puts the advantage, at least with respect to this kind of attack, in the corner of the jihadists. And it's adaptation to this on the part of state authorities trying to keep the public safe is not going to be instantaneous.
Hmm. All right. Well, thank you so much. Excellent food for thought in your article, David Gartenstein-Ross. The name of the article, again, is ISIL's Virtual Planners, A Critical Terrorist Analogy. DefendDemocracy.org for more information. David, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us.
Likewise. Take care.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.